And looking forward to tomorrow night's Coast to Coast Live, when we'll pick up that conversation we started last hour with Gary Patterson about Elvis Presley and the family insiders that still wonder whether or not he is alive. And in fact, they surprised a filmmaker that was working on a documentary with the number of people who knew Elvis closely, who insist that, no, he's still alive. And they're not just being metaphoric either. Not like the conversation we were having with Jared Johnson. He produced the movie The Transfiguration of Harold Maines. It's a fictional story, a mockumentary, kind of in the vein of like Eddie and the Cruisers, maybe. Well, maybe not quite like that, but it's sort of like that. Spinal Tap, perhaps. But the idea was that you could, whether or not it was possible for somebody to become a horse, whether somebody had the soul of another creature, a non-human soul within their human body. They call themselves otherkins, and there's lots of people who believe that they are one. We have set up in a special otherkin line, and we already have our first caller on that. We'll get to that coming up in just a second. Scott in Greensville, South Carolina, hang on. As for a couple other stories that were still on the table, too, looking forward to getting an update on whether anybody knows about that headless Thompson gunner. And this story about the rocks from heaven. The story is from Freehold, New Jersey, Freehold Township. And it's about this golf ball size rock that landed. They went through a roof. And it was just interesting. The scientist from Rutgers University they interviewed said that 20 to 50 rocks a day land on Earth. My question, but he said they were going to investigate this to find out if it was a meteorite. If it's a rock coming from space, doesn't that naturally mean it's a meteorite? And if it's not, I'll admit I'm the dumbest guy I know, but where else do the rocks come from? Is there like a gravel sphere or something like that outside of space? You tell me if you know better. Also, I think it's not surprising that it landed in Freehold Township, New Jersey, this rock. You know, the last time the town was rocked so hard is when Bruce Springsteen landed there a few years ago. All right, so we're getting going. We gave you all the numbers. At this point, it's up to you. Where are you going to take us next? In for George Norrie. It's Open Lines and More on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, going all over the country, we're going coast to coast, open lines for the rest of the night. Where are you going to take us? We'll start with the other kin line, people who have non-human souls, or at least so they believe. The number is 818-817-0021, and Scott is in Greenville, South Carolina. Hey, Scott.
Hi, how you doing, Ian?
Lovely part of the country. Been down around there many times.
And it's nice weather down here right now, except for the rain.
Well, you know what? It's pretty darn nice in Minnesota, actually, today. So there's a lot of this warm weather to go around. Tell me about you. Do you believe yourself to be an otherkin?
When I was 17 years old in 1989, I had a tape given to me that would reveal to you a past life. It was a self-hypnosis tape. When I did this, I discovered that I was a white dragon. Not something I normally would have believed before, but it just was implanted there.
Now, you say white dragon, do you mean as in like the head of the Ku Klux Klan white dragon?
No, okay. A flying dragon.
A flying dragon, like Aragorn, kind of a flying dragon.
Well, Aragorn was the rider. I've seen that movie. Great movie. I'm infatuated with dragons.
But that's the idea, flying dragons.
Yes.
Okay, exactly. And so why you say white dragon? You knew you were a white dragon. How did you know that?
Because I saw myself. I ascended like an out-of-body experience. I ascended above the earth to where I could view the entire earth as if it was standing or actually flying farther out than the moon's orbit. And so, you know, my wife is funny because my wife calls me a social dragon. Because I'm such a social butterfly, if you would. But she says, no, you're not a butterfly. You're more like a dragonfly. And then she's updated that to be just a dragon.
Social dragonfly.
I told her about my experience after she called me the social dragon. I said, it's funny you should say that, honey. So, yes, I'm a white dragon. I've never known that it was called Utterkins.
Yeah, well, if you Google that, I think you'll find a couple of different places where you can chat with other people who are also dragons. How does that live itself out? I think we're differentiating slightly here to say that in a past life, through self-hypnosis, you revealed that you had been a white dragon. I firmly believe it. That's fine. But the difference is there are people who say that they are a dragon right now. They're just the dragon soul trapped in a human body. And they feel this great conflict of being something that they aren't. Where are you with that?
That's exactly where I'm at. The soul is the transference to the current life. And that is what I have been for centuries, if not millennia.
Okay. All right. Well, then, Scott, I will ask you one other question and then we'll go. Do you, as a dragon, do you ever feel like you want to attack somebody or have what we would traditionally think of as being a dragon-like response? I mean, do you ever find yourself having to hold back your dragon soul from how a dragon might respond versus how Scott from Greenville, South Carolina might respond?
Yes. They call it an anger management issue. Call it, you just don't simply understand.
Okay.
Very vicious when angered, yes.
Okay, so you feel that dragonness come out when you feel disrespected or
Absolutely.
Threatened like a dragon.
Absolutely, yes.
Very interesting, Scott. Well, I think you're going to enjoy the rest of the people on the other kin line tonight. Thanks for getting us started. Let's go east of the Rockies. Is it Jenny who's hanging on?
Yes.
Hey, Jenny.
Hello, Ian.
It's open lines. Where are you going to take us?
Well, I had the most incredible vision the other night. And I was just wondering if anybody had ever seen anything like this before. I got up about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was looking out my back window, and all of a sudden this smoke came up, and it was swirling around in like a wreath almost. And it looked like maybe cigarette smoke, but it was white and bright. And it swirled around in like a wreath, and then it drifted off into the sky. Real slowly. It was real slow that it like drifted off. And I was wondering if that was like a omen or aspiration or what in the world that meant.
I don't have any idea. That's very interesting. And you weren't smoking yourself at the time.
No, I'm not a drugger or a drinker or anything like that.
Uh-huh. I was just curious.
It swirled around in like a wreath.
And made like a smoke ring, kind of.
And it was real bright white, and then all of a sudden it, like, drifted off into the sky. Okay. It was the most incredible thing I have ever seen in my life. I'm, like, 60 years old. I've never seen anything like that before.
Jenny, I'm going to ask, and we'll see whether somebody else, just keep listening, whether that rings a bell either as a meteorological phenomenon or any other explanation somebody might have coming up on Coast to Coast AM for open lines. And Lori is west of the Rockies. Lori?
Hello?
Hi, Lori. You still there?
Yep.
All right. Where are you going to take us?
I was just going to say, have you seen the lady that has had major plastic surgery to make herself look like not a house cat, but a big cat? Like a tiger actually like a cougar looking face.
No, and some doctor went along with this?
Yes, she looks exactly like a cat. The nose, if you look at a cat's face, everything about her is a cat.
Okay, and no, I haven't heard this.
Yeah, it's bizarre. If you get a chance, look it up, find her. I forget what her name is. and then there's also a guy that's a lizard man.
Well, I think I saw the lizard guy on, does he do that with tattoos?
And he has his tongue spliced?
Yeah, where a serpentine kind of, I think they call it bifurcated tongue.
Something.
Right. Yeah, I think I've seen that. Yes, okay. I've seen that guy. I didn't know about the cat lady.
Yeah,
so.
You have to see this woman. Okay. It will blow your mind.
What do you think of that?
I think she believes she's a cat.
Okay.
Or else, why else would she do that? I mean, we're talking cheekbones. The eyeballs are lifted up just like a cat. The nose is just like a cat's nose, and it comes down to her lips just like a cat.
Why else would people do that? I would say they're... Maybe she does. Maybe she believes that she has the soul of a cat and she just has to make her body reflect that. But it could also be for the same reason that, you know, some kids on the playground ate bugs.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's attention getting and, you know, they can't play, they can't play the piano. And so I can mar up my face. Right. So I can stick stuff in my eye. I can't.
Let's see how many piercings I can get in one eyebrow. And
right. I mean, and that may be just how some people kind of feel good about putting themselves in the, on the planet. Well, Lori, I thank you for that. West of the Rockies. And we'll go to first time caller line, Steve on Coast to Coast AM. Steve?
Hey, how you doing there, Ryan?
All right, where are you going to take us?
I want to get into the meteorite that landed the house in New Jersey.
Yes.
Kind of burned my britches a tad. It got snatched up right away.
What do you mean by that?
Well, apparently some kind of officials took it. I had two pieces of meteorite that... back in 65, 66, I was 10 or 11 years old. And at the end of our street was a stone road. And me and my buddy were out throwing rocks at birds. Not that that's politically correct right now, but that's what we were doing at the time. And this stone road, I heard rocks land, or, you know, something land in the stone road. Looked around, thought maybe some of the other neighborhood kids were tossing rocks at us, and... I found two pieces of meteorite, one the size of a man's fist and one half that size. And, man, they were hot as you couldn't believe. I picked them up. I ended up kicking them over in the grass. I took them to school when I was in grade school and showed them off. And then I lent them to my sister to take to school when she was in grade school, fourth, fifth grade, something like that. And they disappeared. The school just made them...
Confiscated them?
Whatever.
So you wish you got those back. Well, I don't blame you. I don't think anybody took these meteorites from this house. I didn't hear that. What I heard was
they didn't take them from the house. My sister took them to school.
No. I understand that. No, I'm saying in this story that we mentioned earlier, and thank you, Steve, I thought the story was, in this case, that nobody just... took them from, didn't appropriate them from the university. But it's wrong for your meteorites to have been stolen, and that's sad that you never got them back again, because that's kind of a rip. They landed right there in front of you. But my greater question on that is, they said they're going to test them to find out if they're meteorites. If they're a rock and it fell from space, doesn't that by definition make them a meteorite? What else could they be? I mean, short of somebody flying overhead and throwing rocks out the window? This doesn't seem likely to me, but if you know more, is there such a thing as falling sky space rocks that aren't meteorites? If you know, let me know. And I don't know that it's a matter of politically correct not throwing rocks at birds. I grew up in the 60s, and I don't know, it just sort of seemed like, why kill a bird just because it's sitting there? But I guess everybody's different on that. Ray, wildcard line, let's get you on Coast to Coast AM. Ray?
Yeah, good evening. Ian, you mentioned that guy that was stealing pants.
Yes, the pants.
I got a name for that guy.
Okay, not Jack the Zipper. I like Jack the Zipper. You can do better than Jack the Zipper.
Well, how about strip off, rip off, thief?
Okay.
Strip
All
off,
right.
rip off, thief.
We could go with that. The strip
and
off, rip off.
And a couple other things. On that meteorite, that rock. Two things. If it was an alien of alien origin, it's possible that it could absorb the heat and somehow dissipate it without it getting hot. And secondly, if it was matching the Earth's, I'm just wondering, I'm not no scientist, but I was just wondering if it was matching the Earth's, rotation and also the rotation around the sun and came in at a very low trajectory, would it still act like a meteorite? Would it still get so hot going through the atmosphere?
I don't know. Good question.
That's a question. And then another question, that lady was talking about the leopard. If it's not a lizard man, it was a leopard man, and even went to the point where he had implants where he could screw nylon whiskers into his thing, and he had his teeth shaved where he looked, and he had tattooed leopard skin.
But I've seen the lizard guy. I know what she was talking about.
Lizard,
I've seen that
leopard
guy.
Leopard man.
Okay, I'm just saying there may be a separate guy because I've seen the lizard guy. I remember the person that split their tongue and the whole bit. So, but thank you, Ray. Wildcard line, Roger on Coast to Coast AM. Roger?
Hi, Ian. Pleasure to talk to you.
And to you.
Great. Well, I just want to pick your brain here. I'm calling from London, Ontario, by the way.
Glad to have a tasty on the air. Go ahead.
Great. So, Saddam Hussein.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to maybe reflect a little bit on that, and I thought it was kind of ironic that they actually hung him and broadcast that, and I thought that the new government there was going to try to move away from the kind of like the old boys club, the big thugs and whatnot. So I was actually surprised that, first of all, that they did it and that it was broadcast and whatnot. What do you think about that?
I don't know enough about why that would be surprising. I mean, you make it seem like they said we're all going to be very kumbaya, and I don't get that impression about Iraq. I mean, if you give somebody the death penalty, you know, I mean, that's hardly the warm and fuzzy kind of government that would shy away from broadcasting it. And in fact, that's the component to a public execution or to a government execution, I should say, that is supposed to be the effective deterrent is the broadcast of it. Right. I mean, that's why you did the hangings in the town square in the United States. It's just to show this is what happens to the people that break the law and, you know, are attempt to disrupt society.
See, I was kind of looking at it in the sense this was a chance for the new government to show the people that we're going to move away from the old and come in with the new, that we're not big thugs. Like, I mean, I think it would have served the people more if he would have just kind of like rotted away somewhere in prison.
Well, I understand that that's how you would do it. It may be how I would do it too, but I don't know that that makes them thugs. The difference between the thug-ish government of Saddam Hussein is there were no trials, right? And that people just disappeared en masse, and that they would just, you know, there were interviews with people who live here now in the United States who were 3, 4, 5 years old when people from the government just came in, yanked their dad out from behind the dinner table, and they never saw dad again.
Right.
That's a thug. I mean, to have a trial and to be convicted of murder, or in this case, mass murder, why is it any different than, say, the United States, where if you killed 150 people, I think you're a gimme for the death penalty, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, do they broadcast that? I don't think so.
Well, we don't broadcast it anymore, but I think the difference was the government of Iraq didn't broadcast it either. It was taken, the video was taken by somebody's, one of the guards' cell phones, a video phone, and then it was smuggled onto Al Jazeera and then eventually onto the Internet. So it wasn't officially broadcast. So maybe that's the confusion here. As far as I know, the government of Iraq did not put that on TV intentionally. Now, you could argue they, with a wink and a nudge, you know, they let the guy get the video, but I don't know that to be sure. And in fact, there was supposed to be some sort of investigation. Whatever that's worth, we'll leave it there. But that's a great cross-section already of what Open Lines is all about. Now, where are you going to take us? Coming up next, we'll give you all the numbers, including the other kin line for people with non-human souls on Coast to Coast AM. Did you catch the other kin line there? We're using the international number 818-817-0021 throughout the evening. People who believe that they are other kins, that is, they are humans with non-human souls, or like a previous emailer and perhaps the subject of that movie we talked about earlier, somebody who shares their human body with a non-human entity, or that their soul is a portion of a non-human soul, that is three quarters elf, one quarter human, in the case of a previous emailer. There's lots of buzz about this, and don't know whether I believe it, but then again, I haven't talked to many. You heard the guy earlier say that he's a dragon. Scott in Greenville said he knows for a fact that his soul is that of a dragon. What about you? We'll find out about John. He's coming up on the Other Kin line after we get through a few wild cards between now and then. Where are you going to take us? We'll find out next. It's Open Lines for the rest of the night on Coast to Coast Live. Oh, wait, I slipped. See, I'm so used to doing the Saturday night show. Sorry about that. On Coast to Coast AM, in for George, this is Ian Punnett. We've got Nick, who's been very patient, waiting to get on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll get to everybody in order. Nick, thanks for hanging on. Where are you going to take us on Open Lines?
Well, first of all, I just thought I'd enjoy your show. I'm calling from Guelph, Ontario, Canada. And the lady that had that vision about the smoke swirling around in her backyard and going up in the heavens, I have a... something that I just located in Revelation chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. It says, the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven onto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit, as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by the reason of the smoke of the pit. So maybe that has something to do with... Hello?
That little ring of smoke was the smoke of the pit of hell?
I'm not saying that little bit. I'm saying it could be.
Because if that's hell, we're in good shape. If that's the only smoke it kicks out, That was a close call.
No, Ian, honestly, I think it may be a foreshadowing or something more luminous that's going to transpire on Earth.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Nick. Thank you.
I have another thing, similar experience. I believe I'm half alien, half human hybrid, and as a result of that, I believe I don't know if you saw the Roswell documentary a couple of years ago or whatever they had on I think the Discovery Channel, but they showed how doctors and other people around the aliens that they dissected were exposed to some kind of extraterrestrial virus or some kind of just their biological chemistry, and as a result, they were hospitalized, and some of them were placed in a mental institution because they lost their minds as a result of being exposed to that virus. And what I think is going on with these cattle mutilations and everything, I think these extraterrestrials, along with the government, are trying to create half alien, half human bacteria and releasing it, or cow from cows rather, releasing it into the population. Because really, I believe a lot of us are going to be like these extraterrestrials. We're going to appear like them in the future, not necessarily big black eyes, small slit for a nose, and small slit for a mouth. But what I was exposed to in 1992, as a result of that, when I worked at a base that produced military components for a company in the States. Anyway, I started to lose sleep deprivation, rapid weight loss, all these symptoms that, and then I started communicating telepathically with the TV and other people, and it was really bizarre. And
you were communicating You were communicating telepathically with the TV. What does that mean?
Like, I'll explain that. What I mean is, an actor and actress would just before they were to say a line, I knew ahead of time what they were about to say on TV.
Could that just be because you're a bright guy and these TV shows are incredibly predictable? I mean, might be that you have a higher than average intelligence and you could see that line coming a mile away.
Yeah, but you want to know something, Ian? As a result of this, I exposed some people to this virus because my doctor was telling me it's all in my head. And my brother, I didn't get along too well, I exposed him to it. And he also started to communicate telepathically with the TV, and I had rapid weight loss, sleep deprivation, everything else associated with it. And also somebody else from work as well had some symptoms.
How are you communicating this alien virus? How are they getting it?
I'd rather not say.
That's not fair. You can't hold out on us like that. What is it? How do you give them the alien virus? Don't we have to know this?
It'll scare a lot of people, but it's non-sexually, let's put it that way.
Well, okay, I'm glad it's non-sexual with your brother. Thank you. But I mean, what is it that you got to tell me? How do you communicate this? It's not going to scare people. We want to know, how do we protect ourselves against an alien virus? That's not fair that you hold this important health information and not pass it along.
It can be done like through saliva or blood and stuff like that, drop of blood or whatever.
So for like, if you give a blood transfusion, if you donated blood, you would be donating this alien virus?
I'd probably be passing it on to somebody else, yeah. That's why I don't give blood anymore.
You don't give blood anymore because you don't want them to get that. And there's no screening for such a thing.
No, so it's no, there isn't. No, unfortunately, no, there isn't.
Okay. Well,
the government's covering it up, you know, big time. They're saying there's no such thing. It's all in your head, blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, I'm hearing more and more cases of people being exposed to this. And they're just not telling the full truth.
You know, wait. How did your brother get your saliva? That's what I want to know, though. How did that happen?
It's a long story, but
I got a minute.
There's like a glass of orange juice sitting on the kitchen table, and just I timed when he came home from work, and I just placed a drop in his, a couple of drops in his oranges just to see what would happen.
Wait! You really intentionally infected your brother with the alien virus?
Yes. Because he
you
wanted me
doped
to die
his
of AIDS.
Orange juice? You doped his orange juice.
Because he wanted me to die of AIDS. He was calling me some very bad names in 91, him and his brother. And as a control experiment, I exposed my younger brother and I left my older brother alone as a control experiment. But first, before I tested on my brother, I tested on my budgie, my pet budgie.
Okay.
And it came with hot chills, cold chills, fever, and it dropped dead 2 days later. So obviously I couldn't handle the potency of it.
So you infected your budgie with the alien virus?
Yeah, and it started shaking violently. About 24 hours later, it started shaking and then had a high fever and I just dropped dead.
Okay. And then, so you gave your, you kind of, let's just cut to the chase, you spit in your brother's orange juice.
Yeah, because I just wanted to see if this was transmissible. And sure enough, he came down with similar symptoms about a month later. First of all, I came out with deep bronchial infection, like type of cold. And then all of a sudden, about a month and a half, 2 months later, he came to the room saying to my mom, Mom, I'm losing weight. I'm losing weight. And I said, serves you right. You shouldn't have told me to die of AIDS. And then he just walked away and he said, I'm going to get even with you. And other stuff, like I'd be reading a book, Slaughterhouse-Five, and the character in the book says, you don't believe in God? Well, how about if I cut off your eyelids and force you to stare at the sun, then you'll believe in God. And that very when I read that in the book, that very night, my brother had the same dream about that part in the book.
Okay.
So that's
Ever feel bad about infecting your brother with an alien virus?
I do very much so.
Okay.
It's awful. I ask God to forgive me every day about it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate that. And thanks for waiting to get on Coast to Coast AM. There you go. Just another indication of never knowing where open lines is going to go. Mike is hanging on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Ian in for George Norrie. Mike, where are you going to take us?
First I just want to say about the guy who thinks he's half dragon or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I just think I was really hoping for a better response than when he gave to your question about, you know, do you ever have dragon responses? Here's a guy supposedly been around 4,000 years. He can't control his anger.
You think at some point he would learn patience? Is that what you mean?
I would think so. There would be a little bit more insightfulness there.
But perhaps it's just not in a dragon's nature to be patient. You could be around 8,000 years and he just can't learn patience.
I guess not.
It's part of the reptilian brain of dragons. That
there you go.
Know,
okay, well, that explains it. That's why I wish to listen to this show.
You learn stuff.
I learn things.
There you go. So what are you going to teach us?
Well, my wife is very intuitive. And we've been married about 20 years now. And at first, you know, I poo-pooed it like, oh, yeah, right. She used to tell me things like we'd be driving down the highway and she'd go, there's a CHP up there, California Highway Patrol. And I would go, okay, yeah. Half mile later, there goes the Highway Patrol going the opposite direction. So it's not like she could have seen them. And I'd go, oh, that's kind of weird. And it happened a few times. But where she really hooked me was we were in Tennessee about 6 years ago. And we went for a Raiders game, and we were out combing the countryside during the week. We'd rented a car. We were back there for a few days, and we went to this place called the Carter House, and it was where a Civil War battle had been fought. Well, we took the tour with a group of maybe 20, 30 people, and we were downstairs in the basement, and there was a little room off to the side, and they were all crowded in the room, and there wasn't enough room, so we were kind of standing outside of the room in the rest of the basement. And all of a sudden I looked over at her. She was standing in the corner, and she was white as a sheet. And she was like struggling to breathe. And I'm looking at her and I'm going, what is wrong? And finally, I mean, I'm asking her and she can't answer me. And I grabbed her and pulled her away from where she was. And she gasped for air. And she says, somebody died here. They were choking to death. And I'm just going, whoa. And it kind of freaked me out. And so the rest of the group comes out of the room. And the tour guide says, it starts going around, talking about stuff in the basement, what was going on. She says, yeah, and over in that corner where that blood spot is, a soldier was shot in the neck and choked on his own blood. And I just went, oh, wow.
Yeah, that's pretty creepy.
And so then this year we were back in Kansas City and we went to Independence. And we went into the Marshall's house, which was the old jail where Frank James was housed when he surrendered.
Right.
And we walked in, the gate was open, we walked in and we're walking around, there's nobody there, and all of a sudden this lady comes up and out of another room she goes, I'm sorry, how'd you get in here? And we said, well, the gate was open. She says, well, we're closed for 2 weeks to remodel for the Christmas season. And, you know, somebody was supposed to lock that gate. So she goes, but if you guys want, you can wander around. We usually charge $5 a head for the tour. So we were wandering around, and we went off in this one room, and my wife went to go up these stairs, and all of a sudden she got pushed backwards, she said. And so I'm going, okay, I'm believing this stuff now. So we're talking to the lady later, and she tells a story about how they had a jailbreak and there was a struggle on the stairs. But here's the kicker now, and this is where I really love that my wife is intuitive. She is always, you know, I don't feel good today. Something's wrong somewhere, and a relative dies or a relative's sick or something like that. Well, we're diehard Raider fans. We have season tickets. And one morning I get up before the game and we're getting ready to go. And she says, I'm not going today. And I said, why, are you feeling bad? You get a spider bite? Because she's allergic to spiders. And she says, no, it's none of that. She goes, there's just something wrong. I'm not going. And I said, okay. So I called a friend of mine. We went to the game. Well, we got home that evening. And my wife says, I walk in the door, says, you got to take Kirsten. That's our daughter. You got to take her to the hospital. She's about 17 or 18 at the time.
Okay.
And I says, why? What's wrong? And she says, she's running 170 temperature. She's sick as a dog. You have to take her. You have to take her to the hospital. Well, I rushed her into the hospital. She was so dehydrated. One of her kidneys had shut down. They put like 11 bags of saline in her. If I hadn't brought her in, she would have died. They kept her in the hospital for 3 days. Well, it turned out my daughter came home, and she went straight into her room, and she laid down on her bed, and my wife just happened to get up and go in there to see what was, you know, hey, how you doing? And went over and felt her and felt how hot she was. So she put her in a tub, put ice on her, cooled her down.
Right.
And the thing was, at the time that my wife was thinking she couldn't go somewhere, at the same exact time, my daughter was feeling really sick. She had spent a night at a friend's house, and she was saying, Mom, please don't go to the game. Mom, please don't go to the game.
How about that? Well, very good. Well, I appreciate that, Mike. That's very interesting. And not surprising. I mean, I hear similar stories from people who are intuitive. I hope it pays dividends for you, Mike, and she always gets you exactly the gift you want for your birthday and Christmas and Father's Day. Bert on the wild card line on Coast to Coast AM. Bert, where are you going to take us?
Excuse me. About 1955 or 56, I believe it was, there used to be a TV program called One Step Beyond.
Yeah, it was a little later than that. It was in the 60s, but sure.
Well, I knew it was started somewhere back
then.
That's
fine.
But there was a program about rocks falling from the sky in this town, and I think they said it was in the late 1800s. But it was more than, they said, in the tons. They were large rocks that had fell from the sky on this one town.
Huh. Very interesting.
It's supposed to be documented on, you know.
Yeah, because One Step Beyond was different than Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits, in that they claimed at least that the stories were based on true stories in many of those cases. Britt, I appreciate that. Maybe somebody will know more about that. I think we have time for John on the Otherkin line. John, who is in Milwaukee, John, this line is dedicated for people who believe they have non-human souls. Is that you?
Well, I can say this, that I've had several dreams where I've been on all fours, a quadruped, as you would say. And then I had this one dream where I was some kind of caveman or something, and I jumped from a tree and killed a deer with a sharpened stone.
Yeah, but it comes down to, do you believe that you have this soul? See, I think that's the difference.
I don't know what to believe, because I'm a Christian, you know? I got my beliefs and my Christianity, and then I have these dreams, and it's like, where do I go with this? You know, I don't want to piss off God.
Well, I'm sure there are other things in your life you've done that would.
I'm sure.
I mean, if you're going to really go by that, you know, I'm sure. But I think you have to, and thank you, John. I appreciate that. I think you have to explore whether or not that's part of your consciousness. That's kind of what we're getting at. The difference between dreaming that one is something and living it in real time that you are. I mean, that was the difference between what Scott and what some of the emailers are talking about. They live it every minute. It's not an occasional thing that comes to them in their subconscious. They believe in their conscious mind that they have the soul of another creature. So we'll go from there. We'll see whether other people are on board. East of the Rockies, Larry on Coast to Coast AM. Larry?
Hi, how you doing?
All right, where do you go with this?
I have two things. The first one, I was wondering if you ever had experiences with a Ouija board.
Yes.
Can you tell me how they communicate with, you know?
I have no idea. I don't know whether they were valid experiences. I don't know whether to what level it was supernatural or just unconscious. But I will tell you that in the one or two experiences I had with the Ouija board, it surprised me that there were any results at all surprised me. And the fact that the results seemed so emphatic and so clear when we were doing ghost hunting in a haunted chapel. It was at Lake Forest College in Lake Forest, Illinois. And I lived in the dormitory next door to the school's chapel, where there had been an apparition that had regularly appeared to a night watchman on campus for many years. So much so that they had put the night watchman's checkbox, you know, that thing they have to go to tell them what time they'd gone through that building, that key box, they put it outside of the door because so many of the night watchmen had been so freaked out by going into the chapel at night. So we went in with a group of students and a Ouija board, and we spent the night in the chapel. We tried to see whether or not that there was anything there, and then I wrote about an article about it. And what we came across was in our Q&A with the Ouija board, a surprising and very clear response to some questions. And I'll share both the questions and the answers with you coming up next. It's Coast to Coast AM. We're doing open lines all night. I'll tell you my story if you tell me yours on Coast to Coast AM.